long ago, I became quite interested in something called attachment theory. And I'll explain a little bit about it. I won't be able to go in depth into this theory because it's quite complex. But I will just give you a sort of brief overview of what the attachments are and just explain about the children's sort of disposition. And but I want to concentrate more on the on one of the attachments especially, which is the one you should avoid. If you're gonna get involved with somebody, do avoidant attachment people, and you'll see why. So the theory goes that there are four types of attachment, and these are formed in early childhood. When I mean early childhood, I mean really early, from day one. And it's a theory that has been sort of evolving over time. Started with Mary Ainsworth and Barbara Whitten talking about in 1970 talking about the avoidant attachment, which is the one I will dwell a little bit more into today. And subsequently, Mary Main and Judith Salomon added the full spectrum, so the four attachments that are known today. And this type of theory is very used in counseling and therapy circles. So there are four types of attachments. The secure attachment is the one when the children would develop if they have a parent or a caregiver. It doesn't matter, it's whoever is providing those needs, who is sensitive and responds to the child's needs. And this type of children have the confidence basically that the parent will be available to meet their needs and give them comfort when they're distressed and so on and so on. So these are children that are reassured that the parent, in whatever circumstances they feel stress, the parent will meet their needs. That's simple. Then there is the avoiding attachment, which is children who do not have caregivers that show to be sensitive to their emotional needs, and do not respond to the child's distress, and these children become very independent, and obviously they learn not to rely on a caregiver, and they become subsequently very independent physically and emotionally. There is another attachment called anxious or insecure attachment, which is children who do not have consistent responses from the caregiver. So someone who has a caregiver that goes from hot to cold, sometimes responds, sometimes doesn't. And obviously these children develop some kind of anxious attachment because they don't know when a caregiver is going to be available to meet their needs or not available. So they become anxious about whether their needs are going to be met, and they show sort of clingy behaviors around the caregiver, and also they become sort of insecure in themselves because of that sort of experience and interaction in early life. The next attachment is called disorganized attachment. And this one is a little bit similar to the avoidant attachment. So it's formed in a similar manner, but the caregiver is more, distant, not available, but also kind of a bit more aggressive, So it's on that side. So the child develops this sort of need for the caregiver, but also a fear So this particular attachment has some kind of fear attached to it. So those are the four main attachments that people will refer to. And there was this experiment that started the whole thing, done by Mary Ainsworth, and it was done in the 70s, where she set up a room where there would be a child, a caregiver, a parent, and a sort of trained observer playing with the child. And then at some point, the parent would leave the room. The child would stay in the room with the trained observer, and the observer would record the child's reactions. And this way, the beginning of this theory started to form. So what the observers recorded was that the children with the secure attachment, when they saw the parent, the caregiver leave the room, they would cry, which is totally normal because they are with a stranger now in the room, right? So they would cry, and then when the parent re-enter the room, the child would go straight to the parent, and the parent would soothe and, you know, comfort the child. So that was what the observers recorded over and over again. Now, the children with the avoidant attachment, when the caregiver left the room, they just didn't really react. They remained calm, you know, as if it didn't matter that the parent left the room. And when the parent returned to the room, the child would avoid or resist having some contact, so wouldn't go to the parent for any for support. It's just kind of completely indifferent. Oh, she's back, or he's back. No importance whatsoever. But the interesting thing was that the secure children who experienced distress and were very obvious in expressing that distress by crying, or, you know, they noticed that the children with avoiding attachment that appeared to be calm and sort of didn't care that the parent left the room were experiencing the same level of distress as secure children. They just didn't express them. They just didn't show any emotion in that regard. So that was interesting. So they did experience distress, but did not. Did not show how they were feeling. And that's a few reasons why the avoiding attachment is formed. And it's just basically comes from all children need to form a close bond with the parent or caregiver. That's just a given. We understand that part. But what happens when there is repeated rejection of their attempts to form this secure attachment? That's where a child sort of learns to suppress that desire further on for comfort when they are distressed or upset. So they kind of learn, well, there's no point of going to this person, they're not going to really give me any comfort, so I may not bother in the future. And it's just when parents are consistently, I mean, we all as parents have a bad day where we can't be bothered or we're just too tired or stressed, but this is not about the one-off or the few ones off. I mean, who hasn't been, you know, not the best caregiver at some point when they are not feeling great, or, you know, like I said, tired or stressed about other things. We're talking about consistent behavior from the caregiver, consistent every time, that sort of thing. And that's when, yeah, the parent or caregiver is consistently emotionally unavailable. And don't be mistaken, don't judge because a child looks super clean, has the best clothes ever, has all these toys and all these material comforts. This is about emotional presence of the caregiver, not about neglect in a sort of physical way. So these children might be having all these amazing things given to them by the caregiver. So this is a particular thing about emotional comfort from the caregiver. And the reasons why some parents, caregivers behave in this manner is, well, there are many reasons. I'm not going to even be able to mention all of them. But it could be obviously lack of knowledge on how to support a child. The caregiver themselves having lack of empathy, so they just don't recognize the distress in the child, or, you know, fear or so on. Feeling overwhelmed by parenting responsibilities all the time. Not having a sense of commitment towards the children. And also, this is quite important, because sometimes what we received as children, the kind of parenting we received from our caregivers, we might end up repeating to our children as when we become parents or caregivers ourselves. So it might be that the avoidant parent experience avoidant parents themselves. So it's kind of like a chain reaction. And the thing is, eventually children stop connecting to their own feelings and their needs, because eventually they don't see a point in experiencing these when they can't express them to the caregiver. So at some point the children like literally disconnect. And these children sort of learn strategies to self-comfort and become, like I said, reliant on themselves. They kind of decide, well, you know, there's nobody out there for me that will comfort me, so I have to learn to be independent emotionally. And then, therefore, they would lose trust in others, and also would be the type of children that would not reach out for comfort anymore. So these children don't show sort of outward display of a desire for closeness with, you know, adults in general. They don't seek out love, they don't, but that doesn't mean that internally they don't experience distress and normal sort of emotions. It's just that they just stop seeking out, they just learn not to express their emotions, and then eventually lose touch with their own emotions. So they sometimes, these children, you will see them, they want to be near their parents, the caregiver, but they're not interacting with the caregiver, they just seem indifferent. You know, when you observe them in a room or in a situation, they're just kind of not really looking at the caregiver, not really acknowledging the caregiver being present. And what I said earlier, this stuff carries on into adulthood most of the time, because I don't think, you know, a child would recognize, oh, well, I have a problem, I need to heal myself. This kind of rolls over into adulthood, and it could be that adults recognize that they have this type of attachment and affects their relationships, and they want to seek out support, help. Or it might be that they're not aware, because this at this point has become a sort of embedded behavior, so most people wouldn't be even aware of that it affects them and how it affects them. But you recognize the adults that have avoidant attachment, because these are the people that tell you they don't need anybody. Yeah? These are the people that in general avoid emotional closeness in relationships. And also the people that overreact in front of some kind of emotional, you know, requests from their partners or somebody close to them. They will kind of label this person as clingy, just because someone wants to get emotionally close to them, wants to get them to open up or something like that. because this is not their style. You know, they don't dwell in the realm of emotions at this point in adulthood. That's just completely, that door has closed up, and they see people are probably behaving in a complete normal way, talking about feelings and emotion as sensitive or clingy. And they also, in sort of stressful situations and conflict and things like that, they will completely withdraw, they won't engage, they just, you know, just shut down basically. They would suppress their emotions, they would never complain directly, they would never open up and say, well, you know, I feel like this is, you know, that would never come out of the mouth. They instead will go and sulk along, you know. And if it comes to a point that they might say something, they will never say it directly, but they will just hint it, you know. They will, you know, withdraw again from any sort of conversations that might be a bit challenging to them in terms of someone seeking out to sort of scrub the surface and get a little bit deeper emotionally. Lots of their behaviors are driven by a fear of rejection. So by not engaging at all, they don't need to get rejected. If they don't get involved with people in a deeper level, if they don't, you know, make a move to open up to somebody in any way or become a little bit vulnerable, there's no, you know, possibility of them getting rejected. So you will see them as very cautious. And then they're very independent, you know, they never need any help from anyone. They have, because their emotional needs weren't met, these adults tend to develop a really high self-esteem about themselves in other regards. And I'll explain a little bit more about that in a minute. But, and yeah, they become selfish because they had to fend for themselves emotionally all their lives. So at this point they're self-sufficient and sort of slightly selfish, so they look after themselves mainly, and they're just not interested in the needs of others. So yeah, like I said, it carries on into adulthood, and they're just, I mean, just basically to prevent that, I mean, for some adults it's late, they need to sort themselves out, but for parents with young children, do not tell your children, don't cry, you know, that's silly, boys don't cry, or, you know, stop crying. You know, if the child falls down, to just reprimand them for exhibiting distress and seeking out comfort. You know, don't reject your child when they're seeking comfort. Talk to your child to get them to express their, how they're feeling. Use those kind of words. How you're feeling? What's going on? You know, have that conversation with your child so they learn that it's okay to, you know, express emotions, even negative emotions. This is healthy. So you're kind of giving them that sort of model to go by. And don't shame your child for making mistakes, you know, be comforting, show them what's a better way to do something, obviously, but do not shame children. Those kind of parenting behaviors are going to result in long-term damage for an adult. There's a little bit more about the avoiding attachment, which is the one that I said I wanted to talk a little bit more about it. But yeah, this is about children that learn to wear some kind of mask, where they also, it's the adults that, you know, always pretend they're all fine, that I'm fine, you know, and in a stressful situation, which is not a normal behavior, but they're, you know, absolutely fine, because they see expressing, they have learned from the caregivers and parents in early childhood that expressing their emotional needs is a weakness, you know, stop crying, shut up, you know, silly, you're being sissy, that kind of language, you know. So these children obviously learn to pretend that they're fine, there's no problems, I don't feel sadness, you know, that sort of thing. In any sort of situation where as adults, their approach about their emotions, they become really distressed, and you can see distress signs in them as they are dealing with that person expressing their needs emotionally and so on to them. You can physically see the stress levels going up, you know, fidgeting and that sort of, you know, people express stress in different ways, but you will see someone behaving in a stressful manner. If you know them, you would be able to observe those sort of signs. And this is interesting because that was like an added layer where it says here something about the adults avoiding attachment, adults. So what they do to mask that sort of unmet need that they had emotionally is what they do is they increase the self-esteem through status and achievement, and they tend to throw themselves into their work, into their passions, into their goals, so away from, you know, the realm of people and relationships and interactions, because that is not their comfort zone. So they tend to kind of avoid dealing with these things is to become a success in their work, and they generally create a sense of that's how they, because they can't control that, their success, you know, in that area. It gives them a sense of safety and control, and also in being self-sufficient and successful, you know, I achieve these independently of others. So it gives them that sense of safety and a sense of significance through boasting their self-image, so that they always appear they have it together in that way. So yeah, this is pretty much a quick overview, and like I said, look out, you know, attachment theory, there's lots and lots of material out there, videos explaining it more in depth if you are curious about it and you want to, I don't know, look at it for yourself or someone that, you know, you're involved with. Do seek it out, because I mean, I know people look at horoscopes and things like that to try to figure out other people, but this is real science, and it does make sense. It's not based on, you know, planets and whatever, it's real stuff, and it would illuminate a lot about yourself and how you deal with relationships and what's your approach to dealing with your own, you know, stress and needs, emotional needs. So it's quite interesting nevertheless. If you're into psychology, this will also be quite interesting. If you are in a certain capacity, like a teacher or a mentor, a counselor, those sort of professions, is quite useful to have this understanding of attachment theory. Hope you enjoyed this one, and I will see you soon for the next episode.